Hello and welcome along to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. I'm your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
If you've been struggling with anxiety or know someone who has been, then this podcast is for you.
Today, we're going to be covering some more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.
Ready? Let's dive in.
So welcome to the Anxiety Specialist podcast, Sue, and I'm just going to introduce you to our audience. So Sue Rogers is an author, a gut health coach, and a yoga instructor. So she's here to share with us how helping heal the gut is being found to help lower anxiety, which is really exciting to dig into. So can you tell me your story about that? How did you come to be doing what you're doing?
Oh, man. Yes, I would love to share. So my background, I originally went to college and at the time, it was over 20 years ago. I stopped counting once it got really far.
Fair enough.
But I studied wellness. So wellness was what my major ended up being in. And at the time, it wasn't that popular, but it fascinated me. And I thought, this is what I want to do. It's transformed over the years what I've done. I started off mostly teaching fitness. And then I realized with my own health journey that changing my nutrition was way more important than trying to out-exercise what you're actually eating. And it came about that in my early 30s, so I'm 41 now, in my early 30s, my kids were babies, I was driving around, and I had this weird brain fog that would come over me to where almost like I felt like I was about to pass out, but I wouldn't. And it would scare the crap out of me because my kids were babies. And I thought, first of all, I shouldn't be, you know, potentially crashing my car with me in it, let alone my babies.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, what is going on? So we can dive more into it. But long story short, ended up finding out it was chronic inflammation in my sinuses. And the only way to actually really heal that was to heal my gut. Everything is tied back into your gut. It's crazy how much all of our health stems from the health of our gut.
Wow. Oh my gosh. It's so great that you actually found a reason for what was going on, because so often when you experience something that can be really frightening, like almost passing out, it's sometimes really hard to figure out what is actually going on. So it's so helpful that you actually were able to know what that was and find out what that was. Was that quite a process to get to that?
Oh yeah, it was years. Because initially I ended up getting an MRI so they could scan my brain. Because my health history, my mom had a benign tumor on her pituitary. So they're like, let's just do a scan. Wow. Let's just make sure everything's okay. And like my mom's still alive and kicking today. So good, she's good. But so we did the scan and all they found was inflammation in my sinuses. And they were like, I live in the United States. So they were like, here, take these allergy meds for the rest of your life to dry out your sinuses. Here, take this nose spray for the rest of your life to keep everything clear. And I thought, I don't want to take anything for the rest of my life. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. That's never made sense to me. And doing my own research, what actually started me researching more was my dentist, of all people. My dentist.
Wow.
I went in for a cleaning and he said, anything new? He had seen me since I was 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
He said, I've got this chronic sinusitis now. And he looked at me and said, you are way too young to have a chronic condition. You should look into what you are eating. And I thought, why is my dentist telling me this? But he really is the one that really got me thinking even more. Like, you know what? I'm going to start looking this stuff up. And found that generally, if you have chronic sinusitis, you also have heartburn because your body produces more mucus to coat the esophagus and all the irritation from the burn that's happening from the acid reflux. And I've dealt with acid reflux on and off my entire life too. And I thought, okay, I can't ever heal my sinuses till I heal my stomach and the gut. But it was quite a long process. All right. It's probably 10 years in full process because I'm still learning new things all the time. But yeah, it'd be about 10 years ago that my initial journey began. And then I just keep learning more and applying it and then helping others, taking knowledge that I've learned and sharing it to help others figure out how to heal their things, giving the body what it really needs so that it can heal itself.
I want to come back to what you said about not wanting to be on something for the rest of your life. Like, it's the frustrating thing I find sometimes with the Western medicine is that it's the symptom management, and it's like, be able to get rid of your symptoms of it, But yeah. It's like, you'll need to keep taking this because the symptoms will keep appearing. And if you stop taking it, the symptoms will reappear because the underlying cause isn't being sorted. It's not a cure. It's a get rid of the symptoms. So get rid of the symptoms so you can carry on with your life. It's like, yeah. I'm in pain. Have a painkiller so that the pain's not there, but the cause of the pain's still there. And you go kind of going about our life. A great example, actually, is when you give dogs painkillers. Like if they've got, like, I know our elderly dog, when I was a child, it had bad like joints and things like that. You give it painkillers mm-hmm. and it will just bounce around like it's a brand new dog because it doesn't know that actually it's still got the issue and it can really damage itself because it hasn't got that alert system to say something's wrong and you need to take it easy. And it's getting to that. It's so interesting that you came through that journey as well, because what you were saying about how someone said, oh, what you really need to sort out is your food. And you're like, okay, I'm going to look into that. Really? I remember when I was struggling with my mental health and especially with depression. Mm-hmm. And one of my cousins, actually, his wife came to me and said, you know, you should really look at what you're eating. And my husband's like studied clinical psychology at university. And so he went through all those papers and courses. And he was like, if this was actually a thing, I would have learned about it in university. He's like, I will look into the research about this. And he went in and looked at the research. And he's like, why are they not teaching this? Because, oh my gosh, it's actually quite a big part of the picture. And we're really big on people doing their psychological work. It's important to work through the thoughts we have about things and that side of things. And there is physical components that impact on our wellness. And chronic inflammation has a big part, especially if you've got inflammation in your brain from eating inflammatory foods and your gut, then that will impact sort of depression, anxiety. I know now for myself, when I have foods that cause more inflammation, I'll get way more anxiety. And it will infect even my dyslexia. It's like neural sort of divergent conditions are a lot worse when you're not eating right. So it's it just what you're saying is just so in line with our experience of both personally going through it and then also looking into research out there about this. So it's really cool that you're sharing this, people. So now that you've been that journey, what do you do in terms of who do you help and how do you do that in terms of helping people with doing their own work?
So it's funny because I, you know, sometimes I meet people online now, thanks to social media, and then just people that I know, friends of friends. So over the years, I've worked with quite a few people. And like I said, the last 5 years more specifically have been way more focused on gut health. Prior to that, it was a lot of exercise that I was training people on, as well as the basics of eating healthy. Mm-hmm. So the basics, you know, the basics don't change. Eat lots of foods that are real food found on this planet naturally, not from a box. I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s here in the US, and it was nothing but Pop-Tarts and soda and hot dogs and chips and just junk. Yeah. And not only that, it was, oh, you have an infection? Take antibiotics. Oh, you have acne? Take antibiotics. Like, I took antibiotics for so many things on top of eating all the junk. I mean, it's no wonder my gut was not doing well.
Yeah.
So what I do now when I work with people is some people just need accountability. Some people know how to eat healthy. They just don't have anyone checking in with them to make sure that they're doing what they need to do. And some people are like, I have no idea how to help my gut, but I'm bloated. I have all these issues going on. What can I do? So it's either, you know, follow this certain program that's pre-designed that is from a company that I love. So I can just be like, here, use this. And I coach you through it so that it's, you're not just on your own. Or here, this is the types of foods. And I want you to pick the ones that you actually enjoy because I want this to be lifelong changes, not just a temporary thing. Then we work one-on-one that way. So there's options just depending on what, because different people need different things. All in all, it's a process of, hey, we can do this really intense so that you're resetting. And then when you introduce things back in, you'll know exactly what it is that bothers your system. And usually within the first 5 days, people are texting me or calling me and, oh my gosh, I'm sleeping so much better. I feel so much better. I have so much more energy. And this is without coffee. Like we go coffee free on this. so that your body can get rid of that too. And it's amazing. And it's one of the things I find the biggest blessing. I'm a very feelings person. I feel, I have lots of feelings, maybe empath, but when I see other people feel better, it's like the coolest thing.
Yeah. Similarly, when we're helping people with anxiety, it's like when we see people getting breakthroughs and they do the work and they get through it, it's just like, yes, so awesome. Because it can, these sort of things can have such massive impacts on people's life and functioning, and being able to work through it and help them, support them to be able to make those changes can be so huge. And I love what you said about the reset, because that's something that we did. And you're right, if you don't reset, you don't know what's working or not working for you. So that's such an important part of it. Can you explain a bit more about what a reset is and what that looks like to do a reset?
I was actually just thinking that as you were saying, I was like, oh, I didn't really say what that meant. Yeah. So, right, we were talking, you mentioned earlier about chronic inflammation, right? Chronic inflammation in the body wreaks all kinds of havoc. So a reset is to take and remove all the inflammation-causing foods, so the sugar. And I'm not anti-dairy or anti-meat, but when you're resetting to eliminate those because they can cause inflammation, and you don't have to go completely like no meat, because I have some people that are like, I have to have it. Like, we're going to work for what you know, is going to help through this. And then like processed foods, white bread, all the, you know, bad carbs, all the excess sugar. So you're going to remove all the inflammation-causing foods. Yeah. And people are like, what do I eat? I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, there's so many things left that you can still eat that are actually going to make you feel good. Because when you eat, it should make you feel good. If you eat and you feel like sluggish afterwards, you did not correctly fuel your body for energy and for what it needs. So like anti-inflammatory foods would be all your leafy greens, so good, healthy veggies, because they're really high in fiber, and fiber helps basically give food for your good bacteria in your gut to thrive. Lean meats are good. Fruits are good. I mean, really, that part of it's customizable, and you can look up charts and graphs for anti-inflammatory foods and compared to inflammation-causing foods. So you really just want to make that swap. And so when you're doing that, then your body's internal chronic inflammation has a chance to subside. And what's crazy is a lot of people lose a lot of weight in the first week, but it's a lot of inflammation weight. It's not necessarily fat. It's all the all the inflammation going on in all your internal organs goes down.
Oh, wow.
And you're like, oh, it's crazy, but so cool.
That is really cool. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy how like inflammation, can you explain the purpose of inflammation? Because inflammation must have a purpose.
Yeah. So like acute inflammation is, oh, you get a cut and there's inflammation at the site of the cut because your body is sending what it needs so that it can heal. Acute inflammation is good. We want that to be there. Now, chronic inflammation is bad because your body is working to try to repair the damage of what's going on, but it can't because it's constantly there over and over and over again. So clearly over time, that's going to lead to things like chronic diseases and illness, and even overconsumption of sugar is even being linked to cancer, because sugar is something that cancer cells actually feed off of. So if you starve the body of sugar, then the cancer cells have nothing to feed off of. And there's certain protocols and treatments that are helping to kill off cancer cells from completely eliminating sugar.
That's so interesting, because there's quite a few things that eat sugar, because I was hearing the other day about how like tummy bugs, like the bacteria in tummy bugs often feed off sugar. And I found it really interesting because we dropped sugar multiple years ago and we haven't had a single tummy bug. And we have like little kids, like we've got a 4-year-old and a 9-month-old, and we've never had a tummy bug.
That's awesome.
And it's just really interesting, those knock-on effects of having these unhelpful things in our system. And this is the gut. This, I guess this is the gut thing as well. So like you were saying, they feed the cancer, but in terms of in your gut, you've got a microbiome, and the good bacteria, like it feeds off the good food that you're having. The not good bacteria is feeding off that sugar and the not so good things. Is that kind of what's going on?
Yeah, right. I mean, and think about it. So really, I mean, if you look into the germ theory versus the terrain theory, and terrain theory is where, Like, you're not necessarily catching a bug that's making you have a stomach bug. It's your body trying to get rid of all the junk that shouldn't be in there. So if you're consuming a lot of sugar and that bad bacteria is thriving, and then all of a sudden it's like, nah, we got to get a bunch of this out. That's some of the theories that are out there too. And it kind of makes sense because your body is like, we're on toxic overload right now. Let's push a bunch of this stuff out of the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are interesting theories to check out too.
It is how that in a world where we have so many more toxins and chemicals and things, and food that isn't, I don't really think of it as food, like food that is like mostly chemicals and largely like sugar and gluten and all of that sort of stuff. It's not a lot of food, and it's an awful lot of not food,
right,
packaged stuff as food that maybe tastes like really good, but it doesn't actually do the things that it needs to do to fuel us. Yeah. And without the right fuel, then you've got all this toxic load, and then it's like, what your body does with that, and it's like it causes damage, so you've got inflammation, and then it's like fat cells trying to wrap themselves around toxins to try and keep it from getting to you, and all those sort of ways that our body tries to combat something that we're overloading it with. And so if we can take that load away, then our body isn't like constantly, and it almost seems like it's constantly in combat mode and trying to protect us from ourselves.
Yeah, right. It kind of is. Yeah. That's the whole like chronic thing. Like you're chronically, your body's in distress chronically. And of course people don't feel good. Of course people aren't sleeping right. Of course people have all these chronic conditions. And it's because of the body not being able to do its normal function because it's so busy battling the inflammation that it can't go. Like you catch a cold, it can't just normally heal it quickly. You're not getting stomach bugs anymore. Your body is not constantly fighting other issues or needing to purge junk out of it. So it's in a better just homeostasis all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of setting your body up so that it's more ready for that sort of situation. So that if you do have a bug, you do get a bit sick, you're not as sick because your body's not having to deal with everything else as well. It's not in that overload sort of thing. And I'm interested to hear about your thoughts and your learnings around how it impacts on the anxiety as well, the gut, and how you see that working.
Yeah. And I'm totally curious to hear what you know too. Yeah. So tons of studies out there. Go look stuff up, people. Go look. Go be your own health advocate. Yeah. Educate yourself. But there's tons of studies out there that are showing that the gut is the second brain. Now, I know we've been talking about the gut a lot. So what is the gut? The gut is your entire digestive tract. So stomach, esophagus, or mouth, esophagus, stomach, small intestine, large intestine, all the way out. Okay? Your digestive system is your gut. So they're finding that the gut is the second brain. So your gut and your brain communicate with each other all the time. Think about that gut feeling that you get. That your gut is telling you something's up. It's telling the brain like, hey, I don't like this situation. I don't know what's going on, but we don't like, or vice versa. You know, your brain is sending signals to your stomach, like, hey, it's time to eat. We gotta do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So when your gut is not functioning properly, you're generally not in a good mood. So this is like an obvious one you can test on yourself. Like if you're backed up, or if your gut is just like in knots, or whatever, like if your gut, your intestines, okay, your intestines are not functioning properly, how does that make you feel? Generally, it does not feel good. Like I don't think I could ever say when my gut's off track, it's ever make me feel good. And then we're conditioned to believe that, oh, it's just as you age, you're supposed to feel like crap. So not true. So not true. So, you know, if you think, oh, I'm feeling off, my system's sluggish, I'm in a bad mood, I'm tired, I got breakouts, I got all this weird stuff going on. And you're like, well, I guess that's just what's supposed to happen as we get older. Wrong. I feel better now in my 40s than I did in my 30s. So when you start to heal your gut and it feels better, generally you're in a better mood. And so that's one direct, just anyone can do that experiment on yourself. Just pay attention to how you actually feel. What they're finding with anxiety, also same thing. So your chemical balance generally is off if your gut health is off. And so then that's messing with the natural, you know, communication system between the gut and the brain. And so it can mess with things like anxiety, depression, ADD, ADHD, but go look up those studies on your own so you can actually see like the all full detail breakdown of what's happening. But they're finding that with using things like probiotics in some people, certain strains of probiotics, depending on what each person's gut needs, because there's tons of different strains, but they're able to use those to help people get off of their anxiety meds.
That's cool. Yeah. And that's another situation where people get told, oh, you'll have to take this for life type thing. Here's your anxiety medication and you're going to be on this for life. And it's really cool to find, because when I changed my diet, that was when I came off my medication as well. I actually mismedicated. Michael mismedicated me because we were changing medications. And the dosage level was different for how many tablets you take. But I was supposed to be going up a dose and accidentally got significantly underdosed. And so had massive withdrawals, which I thought was like because I was going up. And then I went through that. And this was the same time when I was coming off changing food as well. And then realized I'd underdosed myself. But that I'd managed to stabilize within a couple of weeks. Those 2 weeks, though, were rough, man. Almost some psychosis-type symptoms, almost hearing voices type thing.
Wow.
But after 2 weeks, it kind of had stabilized enough where I was able to talk to my doctor and we're like, well, you've stabilized at this lower dose, and this dose isn't even a therapeutic dose. Like, this isn't going to be doing anything.
Yeah.
So why don't we, you know, we'll come off it. And so I ended up coming off my medication and used that. The food change to really support my mental health and very much my dyslexia as well. Like the change in my functioning as a dyslexic when I changed the food. Mm. Microbiome was a big thing in terms of probiotics and sort of bacterial rich foods like yogurt and kefir and sauerkraut and things like that.
Yep.
And which I haven't been doing as much of, which I need to get back into because I'm really noticing that, especially within terms of not being as resilient to colds recently. I'm just like, that's the thing we've dropped recently. I really need to get back into that. But yeah, that was an interesting shift was when I did that. And we've kind of looked at it in terms of I'm very reactive to things, very reactive to medications myself, and very easily get inflamed. And so when I have something inflammatory, it's like it inflames my brain and I can't think properly and I just get super anxious. Or it's like milk seems to make me super anxious like a day or so afterwards. So it's when it's kind of gone through my system and then I've inflamed from it. Can do organic, but I think something to do with what they put into the non-organic stuff. That's the issue, which I find really interesting. And this is where what you said about the reset is when you reset, then you can bring things back in and go, okay, so we brought in organic stuff, milk products. We were doing kefir at the same time. So there was all the bacteria. This is I'm wondering what you think of this. The bacteria for like fermented milk product, I seem to be able to digest milk products better if I'm incorporating that into my gut. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I haven't experimented with those yet, but I've read tons about how beneficial that is for anything fermented, because the fermentation process actually has live cultures of good bacteria in it. So yeah, it's going to work better in your system than stuff that has no cultures and who knows what other ingredients in it that may or may not be labeled or how the stuff was actually processed. Fermentation is a huge thing for adding natural good bacteria in your system.
I have this theory about it. That you're adding, not just adding good bacteria into your system, but you're adding good bacteria that actually eats that thing. And so when you eat it, it can digest it as well, especially the lactose and that sort of the sugars and things within what you're eating. So, that's one of the reasons why I'm really big on doing that. I did all of that and it made such a big difference. But with doing the reset, I was able to identify those issues, even though it feels like full on to drop all of those. Like that resets can be challenging because it's eating in a whole new way, I think is the biggest thing, is you can't just kind of go to your usual, it's dinner time, I'll just grab my usual thing, which hasn't been so helpful. How do you get through that initial reset in terms of just helping support people not to give up, basically, because it can be a bit of a challenge.
Right. And I tell them, you know, just take it one day at a time. And it's also like very forgiving. Like, don't think that if you go off plan for one meal that you've ruined everything. If you like, oh man, I just had to grab this on the go. whatever, it's okay. Tomorrow's a new day and you can get right back on track. Like, don't throw away what you're potentially building from one mistake, because one mistake isn't going to ruin everything. I mean, and ideally I want people to work on making lifelong changes. Then I also tell them, okay, well, what's your favorite thing to eat? And let's find a way so that you can still have it, but have it be the healthiest version possible. So you don't feel like you're missing out. I've changed so many things on over the years where there's so much healthier versions of what I used to eat, but it's still some of my favorite things. Like, there's ways that I can make, not that the microwave is the best way to cook anything either, because I know all the different things about the microwave changing, but old school, you could take a mug and microwave like box cake mix to make little individual size cake serving. Mm. Well, I make one now, but I use a protein powder, clean ingredients, and almond butter and a little bit of almond milk. So it still feels like I'm having warm chocolate cake, but nothing in it is bad for me, except for using the microwave, if you're anti-microwave, because I know the waves of the microwave change the chemical. Like, I know.
I still use the microwave because I got two small boys, and it's just like, sometimes food needs to be faster.
Yes. So, but if that's the worst part of it, is that I microwaved it for 45 seconds, again, it's about making small changes. So you can do the full reset. And okay, let's look at what you do like to eat. And here's some examples of recipes of how to make it healthier. And there are actually quite a few places that you can get things from around here now too, that you can find the healthiest version of what they have on the menu. So you could still be out in the world and be like, oh, I can have this, still totally on plan, no big deal. Mm. And still out with friends and doing, you know, being social in life. So that's kind of what my focus is too, is it like, guys, I'm going to forgive you. Like, don't feel like, don't feel like you have to throw away what you're doing from one mistake. It'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And then just, making it so that it's hopefully something that is easy to stick to long-term. I'm all about lifelong change. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten to where I've gotten from completely changing everything all at once. Just when I run out of something, I try to find a healthier version and bring that back into my house.
When you have done it, like we've been doing this for, I think 5 or 6 years now, doing a sort of whole food, no sugar type diet. And it does get easier in terms of, like you said, as you end up buying the healthier versions of things, and then that's what you have in your cupboard. It's a lot easier when you have those to go to. I love what you're saying about finding a replacement. Like, my big thing was I loved jelly lollies. I loved the gummy ones.
Okay.
And so we call them jelly lollies here. I don't know what you call them in the States, but like gummy bears and that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's something about the chew that I was so addicted to. And so I was like, if I'm going on this diet, I have to find a substitute because I'm not going to be able to continue this without it. And so I found a really good gelatin powder, and I use some actual fruit juice with that. And my favorite actually is lemon, honey, and ginger, which I do when I'm not well. And, and also for traveling on, we go on a boat, a ferry across to the other island. And that helps with seasickness as well with the ginger.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's perfect for the boat.
Yeah. And so I've made those, and it gives me that chew as well. And so it just kind of meets that craving. One other thing I did find with that, though, is when I increased the amount of bone broth I had, so I actually had more gelatin in my diet, I didn't crave the jelly lollies as much as I did previously.
Oh,
so I'm like, when is something like a craving for the taste and stuff, and when is it actually an unmet need that we didn't realize we had, that we're meeting with something that doesn't really meet it, but it's what our body is trying to communicate, I need this. And then they're like, you eat that, and they're like, that's not what I needed.
Right?
I still need it. Nice
drive,
you need more.
Right. And the whole craving for chocolate being actually generally low in magnesium.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a big one for me too. Where I was like, whoa, no wonder I want chocolate all the time. And now I just upped my magnesium intake by adding in a supplement. And I did it for my daughter too. She was craving chocolate all the time too. So I found some magnesium gummies for her, and I'm like, hey, just start taking this gummy.
That is so fascinating, because I used to chocolate was another one of those things where I could just breathe a whole block of chocolate without even thinking. And now I barely eat we have a chocolate substitute we make with coconut oil and cocoa powder and honey and stuff.
That's awesome.
Which is really, become quite good at creating these things. It's really helped my cooking, actually, because becoming more creative with this sort of thing and learning recipes and stuff. But I haven't been wanting it as much recently, but we've been putting me on magnesium tablets every so often, so to up my magnesium. Yep. So that's so fascinating. I'm like, oh my gosh, hadn't thought of that. But yeah, it is really interesting how those things work. And I think pregnancy is a really amazing example of those cravings being, you know, when you've got deficits. And I had lots of cravings in my first pregnancy. My second pregnancy, I was on a really amazing multivitamin that's actually been really well researched in New Zealand to help with all sorts of things, especially PTSD after the earthquakes we had. They did some research and they saw that people who had these multivitamins, they did so much better psychologically. And so I'd been taking them myself. And my second pregnancy, I just didn't have cravings. I didn't have the intense pregnancy cravings. And I think it was because so many of my needs were actually met that my body wasn't like, I desperately need, like in my first pregnancy, it was like, I desperately needed mussels. And it was, which is like a little shellfish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like, we were on holiday and we had to go to every single supermarket to find these because I was like, I have to have them. Like, I don't care if we go to 4 supermarkets, somewhere has to have mussels because I just desperately wanted them. I think it was the zinc and maybe the iodine that I needed.
I was totally thinking along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really cool. Oh, thank you. I could talk about this all day. I really enjoyed this.
I did too.
Really would love to hear more about just a little bit of digging into something a bit different is that you have written a book. So can you just like share about your book and what it is about and who it's for? Yeah. And then I'd like to actually talk about the process of writing a book with you.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. So I'm actually almost finished with book number 2 that will be out by the end of this
exciting.
Year. So, yeah. So my first book published in February of this year, Flowers, Faith, Finding Your Way, and Other F Words. Now, there's not tons of profanity in it. One of the F words that I consider an F word is fear. Because fear holds us back from doing so many things in life. And if you're willing to go beyond your fear, there are so many wonderful, unimaginable things on the other side of that. So it's a book about personal growth. There's questions at the end of each chapter to hopefully help whoever the reader is on their journey, wherever they're at in life. Maybe you're just starting to work on personal growth. Maybe you've been working on it for a while. And hopefully it's going to spark something maybe you haven't thought of before. So it's my personal growth journey and what I've learned from beautiful moments in my life and also for some really tough times in my life. Because a lot of times when we go through hard things, we don't generally share them, but everybody goes through hard things. And I got inspired by hearing so many women open up about what was really going on in their lives and what they've overcome, whether it was in person at conferences or reading so many books that I've read over the last 5 years. And I finally was like, you know what? I'm ready to share everything that I've witnessed and grown from in my life. And that's what the book is all about.
Wow, that's so cool. And I love what you just said back there about how everyone has been through hard things. And I remember hearing from one of my friends, she was suffering with severe Crohn's and she had multiple surgeries. And I remember her telling me somebody had said to her that it's like, well, you don't understand, you just have a perfect life. And they obviously didn't know her that well because she was like at times like seriously unwell. And we kind of have these assumptions about other people that they have it easy and that they don't go through hard things. But if we take a moment to sit down and actually listen to the hard things that somebody else maybe has experienced, we go, okay, maybe everyone has difficult experiences, losses, struggles, trauma. Trauma's a big thing, actually. And I think people dismiss their trauma because they do the comparative suffering and they go, oh, well, someone was in a war and they have suffering from that, or a refugee and have suffering from that and trauma. Oh, mine's just from something that happened in school, you know, bullying or something horrible a teacher said to me. Like that can't actually be trauma. But I think it's a real shame when we downgrade our experiences and dismiss them, because then we lose the opportunity to move through them and work on them. And
yeah,
definitely those experiences shape how we see ourselves and the way we talk to ourselves and think of ourselves. And we need to shift those things to grow as people.
Yeah, so. Right. And that's the other thing too. Like if you're afraid to sit with those feelings and allow them to actually move through you so you can process them, then you're not going to be able to grow and move beyond where whatever level you're at in life. And like, is it comfortable to sit with the awful things? No, but you have to. If you can't do it by yourself, like there's so many ways to access people or specialists who can help. Yeah. And like, there should be no taboo around any of that because like we all have stuff. And if you don't have someone you can talk to that you trust to keep your secrets, if you're not ready to share them with everyone, then go to a professional that is paid to keep your secrets that can actually hopefully give you some insight to help you process them in a healthy way. Because it is so easy too to just, oh, take this pill to medicate your feelings so you're not processing your trauma that's causing all these other issues. Here, just go drink some alcohol to relax at night and drink coffee in the morning to give you energy in the morning, but don't sit with those feelings because, you know, maybe if you did, you wouldn't need any of these other things. But it's so easy to just be like, take this so you ignore it and just go have a good time. But then you're just keeping all of that trapped and eventually it's got to come out and hopefully you can just work through it in a healthy way. And know that it's okay to be uncomfortable and sit with that crap because get beyond it and it will change your world.
Yeah, it's powerful to sit with those emotions. It's hard and it's part of the work. It's a hard part of the work. I'm interested to hear, you said you share in your book some of the hard things you've been through and the things you've learned. Would you be able to share one of the hard things that you share in your book and the lesson you got from it?
Yes. So one of the toughest things that I personally went through that was not, I mean, even still, it's kind of like a touchy subject is, so I have my two kids, they're 17 and 14. In between having those two kids, I had a miscarriage at 12 weeks. And I had two family members that we were all pregnant at the same time. And I lost mine. And it was, you know, 12 weeks. So you're like, oh, cool. I'm almost at like the magic safe spot. And I already had one. So I was like, I didn't tell anyone I was pregnant with my son because I was like, oh, it's first pregnancy. I don't know what's going to happen. Got pregnant with the second one. I told everybody right away and then it didn't stick. And I was devastated. And at that point in time, it was one of the hardest things I'd ever gone through. And I felt very alone because older women, like the older generation of women around me were like, oh yeah, none of us really went through that. And I'm like, well, first of all, you guys probably didn't even know because you didn't have the pregnancy test that would tell you like the day you got pregnant. Or potentially who knows what's going on with our bodies and our generation that we've been exposed to that's causing maybe a higher rate. I'm starting to look into that too because I have a funny feeling there's more correlation there than I've dove into yet.
Just on that, there's so many people that are struggling to get pregnant, pregnant, struggling to hold the pregnancy. And it's becoming such a struggle for people. Like, I know of lots of people who have had miscarriages, have had struggles with getting pregnant. It's more common now. Like, it's amazing how many people are actually, well, they want kids, but the struggle to try and have that and the pain of experiencing getting pregnant and then it not going
full term. I've got, out of five of us that were all pregnant and six, all pregnant, having babies all at the same time, all of us, no matter how many kids we've had, and it all happened in different order. But after mine happened, basically everyone that I know in their journey to have kids had at least one miscarriage in the process, all at different times, not at the beginning. Some of them were after the third kid. Some of them, like, it was crazy that, like, it was just like, oh, nope. Now so-and-so had one. And I thought, oh, I don't know what to say other than, hey, I'm here for you. I know this sucks. Or however you need to feel right now, you can feel. Because I had some people like, you've got one already. You'll have another one again, trying to cheer me up. And I was like, I need to be mad right now. That's what I needed. Some people were, it seemed like they were okay with it. I needed to be mad. I needed to process the trauma first by being angry. And I distanced myself from a lot of people. But that's what I needed so that I could process and move on. And my two sisters, I freaking love them. They both at the time were totally single. One of them's older, one of them's younger, but they were like, come hang out with us. we're not getting pregnant anytime soon. And I was like, I love you guys. Thank you for being here for me right now.
Yeah.
Because I was so jealous of the others who were still pregnant when I wasn't, that I was like, I can't be around them because I'm miserable and I don't want to be miserable and mean to them because I can't handle my emotions right now. And I need to process this. So yeah, but the beautiful thing that came out of that clearly is my daughter. But also when I was pregnant with her. So flowers is part of the title of the book. There's many instances in the book that talk about my grandma's purple iris flowers that I have planted in my yard. They're transplants of hers.
Oh, wow.
When I was pregnant with my daughter, so after the miscarriage, I was pregnant, about 8 weeks pregnant. And here in December, it's winter. So these flowers bloom in like March or April. They only bloom once a year. 8 weeks pregnant, walk out the front door of my house, super nervous about this pregnancy sticking or not, thinking about my grandma who had passed on. And I walk out in December and these flowers were blooming. And it was like my grandma was there telling me, you're going to be okay. This baby's going to be okay. And I just like looked up, started crying as I'm taking out the trash. I'm like, okay, grandma, thank you.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And there's multiple instances where those flowers have bloomed at these really beautiful moments in time for me, for my mom, friend of mine. And so that's those stories all connecting and sharing those is a huge part of the book and wanting to put that out. Because I even talk to people too, and they're like, my sign is hummingbirds. My sign is sunflowers. Like they see these things and they tie in with these powerful moments in their lives too, where they're struggling and they're like, oh, okay. I see you. I get it. We're going to be okay.
Yeah. It's sometimes you need just something in the dark moments to kind of give you a bit of a light and a bit of a hope and go, okay, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this and we'll be all right. So, thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And I think it's really cool that you've opened up about that as well, because I think there's a bit of a problem with, there's the difficulty of sharing early, because if everyone knows, then when everyone's like, how's the pregnancy going, then it's like you gotta share even if you're not comfortable or want to share right now. On the other side of things, if we hide it and don't tell anyone, then no one knows that we've had that loss and that grief, and so everyone acts as if the world is normal when your own world is just kind of falling apart. And so it's such a hard balance, I think, between being open about pregnancy so that you have the support and if it goes well and if it doesn't go well, but knowing for those who maybe haven't shared with anyone that they were pregnant and had a miscarriage, to know that other people have gone through it, that's where I think sharing a story like this is so powerful, because so much of life's struggle is when we feel like we're the only ones, and that kind of adds an extra weight when we don't, when we feel alone in it. So thank you for sharing that. This has been a really cool conversation, and it's been really cool chatting with you about the garden, about your book. And I think actually we're going to probably need to wrap it up there, because I need to get back to the kids. But thank you so much for being on here. And thanks for being on the Anxiety Specialist podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. That's it for this week's episode. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to click the follow button and please do share this with your family and friends. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. That's at Anxiety Specialists. And if you're interested to learn how you can live an anxiety-free life, you can get our epic Anxiety Reducer Guide absolutely free, so you can get started right away on getting your anxiety back down. Just grab the link in the show notes. Feel free to message us and let us know what you'd like to learn next. I am your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
And we're going to be back next week with more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.